Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
And we welcome you to Talking.Golf, the first Talking.Golf of the month of March. It's being recorded here on March the 4th. I'm Rob Hernandez. He's Gary D'Amato. And I tell you what, signs of spring are everywhere. First and foremost, Gary D'Amato played golf here today on Monday at Grant Park, and then he drove home in a thunderstorm on March 4th. A thunderstorm on March 4th. I can see maybe Gary D'Amato, a rain turning to snowstorm, but a thunderstorm? And my radar here in the over that shows the Caledonia headquarters, it's coming down pretty good by you.
It is, Rob. It is pouring, and the sky is lighting up with lightning. It's like one of those late April, early May thunderstorms, except it's a couple months early. But everything's a couple months early right now, Rob. We're experiencing spring, you know, in February and early March. Crazy.
It is crazy. And, you know, it's all that I can do. We're trying our best to stay ahead of the course openings. And it continues to be, I mean, we're well over 100. I mean, we're across the state. You know, a number of, you know, what you would call higher end courses have joined a lot of, the mom and pops, the municipals, you know, in opening. You can find a place to play just about anywhere. Now, the interesting thing though, Gary, is they're opening, they're closing, and they're reopening. And I've never seen this before. I mean, we've always had kind of a hard and fast. You know, maybe they'd open for a couple days in February, and then they'd say, see ya, because we know more snow is coming. But I got to give it to the course owners, Gary. They're going to ride out whatever weather we get between now and the real opening of the season.
Yeah, this is all bonus money for them. This is money that these are rounds played that you don't budget, you don't count on. You know, you hope it happens, but you never count on it. And they've been, you know, I mean, we've had courses open now for weeks around here, Rob. Not a lot of them, but now, as you say, more and more and more are opening. And, you know, the weather forecast isn't great for the next week. You know, highs in the 40s, but I don't see a real hard frost coming either. I think the nighttime temperature, in, at least in southeastern Wisconsin, is supposed to be in the low to mid 30s. So I think the turf is going to be fine and it's going to warm up again. And, we're going to have a lot of rounds of golf play in February and March, Rob.
Most of the Erin Hills, Black Wolf Run, Whistling Straits, you know, Sand Valley type courses, you know, they set their opening well in advance of anything related to winter. I mean, normally it's, you know, maybe April 1st at the earliest. I think usually isn't Erin Hills about April 15th. And then, you know, some of them, you know, as late as May 1st. And, you know, they do that for a reason. First of all, they want to deliver a high-end product because of the green fee they're charging dictates that. But at the same time, you know, they also have to protect the, you know, the property on which the course sits. And, you know, that's what we're going to be watching here is whether, you know, these courses that opened early are going to be able to withstand all of, you know, the foot traffic that they got on grass that may or may not be, you know, totally ready to have that kind of foot traffic on it. I mean, I've been watching some of the comments on Facebook in terms of the courses describing what it will take to open. And they are saying there is, you know, in parts, you know, the state for some of these courses that have just opened, you know, snow on parts of the golf course that, you know, may not be integral or may not be high traffic areas, but there's still snow there.
Yeah, you know, I played nine holes at Grant Park today and, you know, I was walking between the long walk between 17 green. I played the back nine and 18 tee. I passed another guy walking, just a walker out, but he asked if the course was muddy, and I said, "No, it really, really isn't." Well, it's going to be muddy now, but it wasn't. It was in pretty good shape, Rob, all things considered. But now this rain is really going to change things. But you know, you mentioned Erin Hills, and I ran into John Morissette at the golf show, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a while here, and he said that Erin Hills is undergoing a complete bunker restoration this winter, and this weather has really helped them get ahead of the curve on that project. So by the time the course opens in late April or whatever the opening date is, those bunkers are going to be done. And it's, you know, it's going to be great playing conditions and great sand and every drainage in the bunkers.
You mentioned, you know, the windfall these courses are getting, Gary. Can you imagine some of the projects that this bonus season opens up for a lot of these courses. I mean, we've seen courses since COVID, you know, renovate clubhouses. I mean, all over the state. I've lost count of the number of golf facilities that have posted pictures of clubhouse renovations to Facebook. And there's some that have opened this spring that are, you know, warning their golfers that, you know, we won't have service in the clubhouse because we're still, you know, in the middle of a renovation. And I think it's really cool. Golf has always been kind of the focal point of many communities, the golf courses. And now I think it's becoming heightened, and we're seeing some courses that had food and beverage and went away from it maybe before COVID are going back to it. This is really an interesting phenomena, not just in golf and weather, but the economic impact of the two.
Yeah, that's a good point. These courses statewide and nationwide are flush with cash because, golf emerged from the pandemic and with great guns, tremendous growth in the golf, new golfers who, played infrequently, played more frequently, and all that goes to the bottom line. So I think a lot of golf courses can entertain some of these projects that maybe they've been putting off for years because maybe they were making a profit, but maybe not a gigantic profit. Well, that's changed the last few years. Golf courses are doing very well. And I think, as you say, they can use some of this spare cash to make capital improvements.
Grant was one of the first courses to open at the start of February, the first Milwaukee County course, Gary, to open at the start of February. What kind of shape is it in right now?
It was in good shape. Like I said, the turf was not very muddy because I think the snow cover, has been gone for quite a long time. And until today, we really haven't had much precipitation. So the greens rolled pretty good. They were the grass isn't growing yet, obviously, but it was in pretty good shape. I really couldn't complain about the condition of the turf or the speed of the greens or anything. It was about how you typically see it, maybe like in late April.
I talked to Mike Wilson, the University of Wisconsin coach, last week after they won their tournament at the start of the week. He mentioned that one of the benefits right now for the Badgers starting out the spring season is that they've been able to swing outdoors at University Ridge and their practice facility is almost snow free, but he also said that many parts of the course are playable. So even though it's not open to the public, the guys are getting out and playing a few holes. And he said the greens are as good as he's ever seen them coming out of winter, and that's really promising. And again, if we don't get a deep freeze, I think the grass will sustain whatever weather we get, and especially, you mentioned we're looking at, high temperatures in the 40s for a while, but we're not seeing those really severe low temperatures into the teens. And I think that'll be critical as we, look to get the rest of the golf courses open as they normally open here throughout the month of March and into early April.
Yeah, Mike Wilson raised a great point because you can hit off mats all you want out of a building through an open door. But there's nothing like, getting to play holes and getting to practice on real turf and watching how your ball, the trajectory and how your ball comes out of off real turf, off real lies. So I'm sure that's helped that Wisconsin team. And maybe that's just one of the tiny reasons that went into their victory.
So first sign of spring is golf courses opening. Second sign of spring that we'll talk about here in Talking.Golf, because he is kind enough to plug our website and our show, but Chuck Garbedian got underway this last weekend. Gary Garbedian on golf on the iHeartRadio network, and he had our friend Skip Kendall on, and Jay Royal from the Golf Show, and others. It's always good to hear Chuck's voice.
Yeah, Chuck's great at what he does. I think this is his 19th season doing this golf show. It's been a real success, and he definitely has the gift of gab. He's got a great radio presence. It's always fun to listen to him. One of the better golf radio shows, I think, in the country. And I've heard of quite a few of them, and Chuck does a great job.
Yeah, so we encourage you to check him out. I was doing that this morning, listening, especially to Skip's part, because I was just curious what Skip was up to. He had just seen it within the last week, Graham McDowell, who was playing on the LIV Tour last week. And so he's working with Graham. And working with others too, apparently. But of course, mainly as he's done now here for the last decade, you know, really reached out to junior golfers and has a lot of, you know, especially in the from the, you know, down in Florida where he lives, a lot of kids in the Orlando area that are going to him that are playing at the college level. So it sounds like Skip's keeping busy. We expect to see him at the AmFam Championship. I know he tried to qualify last week for the Chubb Classic, didn't quite make it, but always fun to hear that. And then, you know, I know Chuck talked about the Milwaukee Golf Show, and you were there. That's the third sign of spring, is that the and not only the third sign of spring, but you can almost guarantee no matter where they move that baby on the calendar, we're going to get good weather, because it always challenges the Milwaukee Golf Show to get people inside when it's so nice outside. And boy, they really blew it out of the roof this year. But they had a better venue to deal with indoor outdoor because they had part of their show outdoors.
Yeah, they, you know, I think this was a good move for the golf show. It had gotten a little bit stale at State Fair Park. You know, people complained about having to pay for parking and then pay for the show. And Jay Royal, the owner of the show, moved it to a ballpark commons in Franklin. And it was actually split between two venues, side-by-side buildings, the Mosh Performance Center, which is basically an indoor football field, Robin. And that's where all the vendors and the exhibitors were, in that building. And then right next door at Lux Golf Bays, as part of the contract with Ballpark Commons, Jay rented out the entire third floor of Lux Golf Bays. So that's where all the equipment guys were up there, and that's where you could go up and hit balls, test equipment. And if you bought something in the vendor booth, you could walk right over to Lux and hit some balls and warm up with your new clubs. So from what I saw, it was a big success.
Okay, who did you see? What did you see?
Saw a lot of people. One thing I did notice was there were more golf course. There's a bigger golf course presence in the vendor part than there had been in recent years. I think last year there may have been only 15 or 20 golf courses, and this year there were double that number. I saw our friend Bob Feller at Reedsburg Country Club. As a matter of fact, he told me about the Holiday Inn Express that you provided a little note to a Sweet Spot this morning on Monday. About that Holiday Inn Express, and Bob had a big grin on his face, because that's going to help the golf course. Obviously, people are going to be stable to stay there overnight and play a couple rounds.
And we didn't put it in there, but you know, at one point when they were talking about that Holiday Inn Express, they were talking about building that on the golf course side of Highway 33, basically where the 10th hole is now. And Bob just, you know, looked at those plans and really lobbied to, you know, not do anything. I'm sure there's land out there somewhere on the back nine that they could acquire. You know, they had to redo the first hole and create a new par three. I think it's the third hole now. But boy, you know, I like it across the street. It's you know, they showed a flyover in some of their pre-opening video that they did for the hotel, and I mean, it is literally right across the street from the left bunker on nine as you go up the hill. And, you know, the Reedsburg Country Club announced that it's going to be open now 7 days a week because the hotel is open. And I tell you, you know, that was when golf got busy in Madison back when I got out of college back in the late 80s, early 90s. I spent 5 years up at Reedsburg, and it was my first time ever really joining a club. I paid, you know, bought a season municipal pass many times, but it was also my first time having to do a clubhouse minimum. And we never, ever had a problem using up our minimum as a family, because we would take the entire entourage, my wife, her family, up to Reedsburg for their Friday fish fry. It was phenomenal. And the food there was great. And then when we go up to golf, my niece and I, you know, they would have a kind of a soup and salad bar at the bar, and we would go in there and have that. And, you know, they obviously renovated that clubhouse massively since back then. And it's even better now. The 1924 Tavern, I think it is, a nod to the fact that I guess they're coming up in 100 years up there at Reedsburg. A lot of courses around the state, Gary, are getting to be 100 years old. We don't age, but they do.
Yeah, you're right. I think there's 8 or 10 courses in the state, Rob, that turn 100 this year, including, I think, Reedsburg's one of them. I think you're right. And, you know, that fish fry, it's one of the best around, Rob. I go on a Memorial Day buddies trip. We play in the Dells and sometimes in Stevens Point at Century World, but we've played Reedsburg a couple times and stuck around for that Friday fish fry, and the whole town comes out for that fish fry. It gets packed.
It is. So it's that's pretty cool. So Bob Feller's there. So they came from all over. Courses did any course news? Any gossip that you heard from some of the golf course vendors?
Well, you know, that's where I ran into John Morissette from Erin Hills, and he told me about the bunker project. I stopped at the Christmas Mountain Village booth, and they said they've the last 3 years they've been on a massive tree removal program.
Wow.
And they said the course has really opened up, because if you remember that, I haven't played it in a number of years, but I remember every hole was basically tree lined.
Yep.
And they've cleared out a lot of trees. So that I think that bodes well for Christmas Mountain Village. A lot of the travel, you know, out of state courses were represented. Pam Shaheen, our friend, was there representing Alabama and Mississippi Golf, and the perfect foursome up in the Upper Peninsula had their booth, typical booth in Milwaukee. You know, a lot of Wisconsin golfers go up and play, you know, Timberstone and the stuff in Harris, Michigan and Gray Wells up there. So yeah, there were quite a few courses represented. I was happy to see that.
And speaking of that, I was just, we're going to be talking amongst ourselves at Wisconsin.golf, our staff, about summer golf coverage. And I was intrigued to see that Andy Landenberger has put together a two-stop swing on the WPGA Junior Tour at the start of the schedule. June 9th, the Junior Tour will have a stop at Pine Grove Country Club in Iron Mountain. And then the next day, the Junior Tour will be at Timberstone in Iron Mountain. What a great opportunity for the kids there, not only in the UP, because, you know, I saw Bryson Mercier, the former, the 2020 WPGA Junior Player of the Year from, Powers, Michigan, at a tournament here in Goodyear last week. And, you know, I think back to all the miles that he had to put on, and, you know, Hunter Eichhorn, Ty Kretz, you know, from the great north, east part of the state going to tournaments. And now, you know, there's a bunch there. I saw, I haven't gotten through the entire junior schedule, but Andy mentioned that Peter Nome of formerly of Minocqua Country Club, and then the he and his wife owned the distillery in town after he left the club pro business. Well, he's going to run some tournaments up there. And I think I saw one of the not Timber Ridge, but just north of there in Trout Lake in Arborvitae. They're going to have a junior tour stop on June 27th. And a lot of that's being done because Peter is able to, you know, provide his knowledge in running golf tournaments and his ability to navigate the, you know, the scoring software to get it done. So even the kids are getting to play these destination courses on either side of the border.
That's pretty cool, Rob, because I'm sure, you know, a couple decades ago, kids coming up way up north and the northeast part of the state and the Upper Peninsula, they had, they had to drive all over to play in golf tournaments. Still the case to some extent, but really nice that they're going to get some events in their backyard that they're going to get to play.
Any non-golf course booths that caught your eye? That I mean, when you go to the Orlando show and then come back to the, you know, whether it's the Chicago show or the Milwaukee show, you've pretty much seen everything. But was there anything that you might have seen here that you didn't see there?
Well, our friends at Old Fashioned Golf, Rob, oh boy, did they have a, you know, last year they were in a regular size, you know, booth maybe 8 feet deep by 12 feet wide. Well, their booth was five times as big this year. And Kyle Herzog, one of the three co-founders, told me that their booth was about five times as big this year. They're going to launch their new line on March 15th for 2024. And one of the cool things, they have a cheese-themed shirt that they're calling the Wisco Diet, Rob.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
How many different cheeses will be represented on that diet shirt there?
Yeah, a bunch. And I don't know if you saw in Sweet Spot, I ran a little photo of one of their new hats. Pretty cool-looking hat.
That is the hat. I mean, that is with the cheese in the state of Wisconsin outline. That is really, really cool. I mean, you know, and these guys, you know, when we did the video with Kyle, I mean, you know, they are not veteran experienced marketers or, you know, designers. And, but these ideas they have to kind of, you know, lift up all that's great about Wisconsin. It's unbelievable. It's like everything is like a home run.
Yeah. Kyle, you know, they started this business, three high school buddies, lifelong friends in 2020. And Kyle told me at the show they've grown 300% every year, year over year. Now, he said that's going to slow down eventually. They're not going to grow 300% for the next 20 years. But But boy, oh boy, they've been a great success story. And you see more and more golfers in our state wearing their stuff.
Well, I go back to, I was first introduced to the Bad Birdie line when Ed Swab's son, Marty, wore one of those flamingo shirts, the WPGA yeah. Junior Championship. And, Bad Birdie has taken off in a huge way to the point now where they've partnered with Four Peaks Brewing down here in Phoenix. And they now have a Bad Birdie line of beer. And they sell the Bad Birdie polos in the brewery gift shop, and of course they sell it everywhere, in retailers. And it's amazing. I think the days of the solid polo, and I'm wearing one right here, a solid red today. I think those days are gone. I mean, I had a buddy of mine in men's league that's got his wife bought a whole line of Bad Birdie shirts so that he wouldn't be just plain and stale. We just cannot do the single color polos anymore, Gary.
No, you're right, Rob. And that brings up another point. I ran into another friend of ours, Paul Hansen with Iron Jock, had a nice big display too, vending area. And Iron Jock and Old Fashioned Golf have been great supporters of Wisconsin.golf. They've advertised with us. They're friends of ours, and Iron Jock. And between Iron Jock and Old Fashioned Golf, two companies that are Wisconsin based and put out some really, really great products. And I say that not because they advertise, but because they're really good stuff, and people were flocking to both of those booths.
Well, I can imagine. And you think about it, if we're up to, we've had temperatures hit 70 already in Wisconsin here, before we flip the calendar to March. And do you know how hot and sweaty people will get if that continues to be what Wisconsin's going to be as we go into May, June, and July? You're going to need Iron Jock shirts, the ones that are able to help mask all that hard work and sweat that comes out when you're grinding for 18 holes in the heat and humidity of a July day in Milwaukee or Monaco or wherever you might be.
Rob, when Iron Jock first came out with their very first stuff, and before anyone even knew who they were or what they were, I bought one of their t-shirts online to work out in, just a workout t-shirt. And that thing, I was telling Paul the other day, that's Paul Hansen, the owner. That shirt still, after it's been sweated in 100 times and washed 100 times, still looks brand new. So, really high quality stuff. And it's great to see that these Wisconsin companies are, carving a nice niche in that, apparel, category in golf, because it's a tough one to break into. There's so many companies that make really good stuff, but these two companies are right up there with them.
Well, great to see that so many people turned out to support the show. Great to see that Jay Royal, was able to think outside the box and find another location that might fit better with the people coming to the show and especially with their pocketbooks, because they don't come there to spend money on parking and admission. They come there to spend money to help pack their golf bags with clubs, balls, and other things, and to learn about what's new. And I think all that was accomplished this week down there at in Franklin. So we've got the golf show season pretty much behind us, Gary. On to the regular season, and we had a lot of stuff going on last week with regard to college golf. That was a big win by the Badgers, I was out covering I guess it was the Loyola Maryland Intercollegiate here in Goodyear that featured Max Schmidtke and Parker Etzel of Wisconsin playing for South Dakota, and then Bryson Mercier and Ty Kretz playing for South Dakota State. And when they got done and I went up to talk to them, they asked if I'd seen what the Badgers did, and I hadn't. And they went low for a second straight day and rallied to beat Wake Forest 840 to 841. Behind tournament medalist Cameron Huss, who closed with back-to-back 66s to win by 5 shots over teammate Blake Wisdom. Again, I mean, if the Badgers are going to make any hay, they're going to have to do it and do it, now till the end of the year just to get to that 500 mark that they need to get to for consideration as an at-large team if they don't win the Big Ten. But if they're going to do it, they're going to have Cameron Huss and Blake Wisdom, two fifth-year seniors that are going to need to lead that charge.
Yeah, Cameron has had great summers the last couple of years. He's won just about everything in the state, came really close in the state am, finishing second to Jack Shelton, won the state open and the Ray Fisher in dramatic fashion. And he's had a really nice college career. I'm not putting his college career down, but I don't think his summer play is necessarily transferred over to college. But now it appears that it might be. Great to see those scores he shot. Some really good numbers, and Blake Wisdom has been a great pickup in addition to that Badger lineup.
Yeah, similar to Clayton Tribue last year off the transfer portal, and really good to see the Badgers getting that kind of production. But you raise a good point. Cameron Huss said that when he realized that he had a pretty comfortable individual lead, he saw that the team lead was very precarious, and so what kicked in was all the stuff that he learned at Century World and winning the state open last year, and of course the Ray Fisher down in Janesville, where he had to outduel his assistant coach to be able to get that W, and it's kind of neat now to see that pay off. Now I did ask both of them about plans beyond this year, and they're looking at that, depending on how things go this spring and into the summer, whether there's any, potential for U.S. amateurs or high-level amateur stuff that they might be eligible for. But they're thinking at some point this summer they'll both turn pro. They don't know quite whether they'll do it for that Canadian Tour Q school that Pearson Hunt is kind of eyeballing, but, the former Heartland golfer down at Illinois. But it's going to happen, and they're both capable of taking it low enough to make a dent out there.
Yeah, and there's the extra carrot dangling associated with the state amateur this year, Robin, that the winner gets an automatic exemption in the U.S. amateur. So if either one or both of those guys remains an amateur through the state amateur and wins it, I would think that they would stay an amateur through August then and play in the U.S. am. But we'll have to wait and see about that. And, they might turn pro before that, but that would be incentive to stay amateur for another month or 6 weeks should one of those guys win the state amateur.
Absolutely. A lot of college golf going on this week again. I got a text from Jason Coughlin, Rachel Coughlin, and, is down in Puerto Rico. And, the picture that he sent was of, Rachel alongside, Reagan Stuckey out of Tennessee Tech. And actually, she's not there. They're down in Alabama. Loyola of Illinois with Brandy Johnson is down in Puerto Rico. So we'll be looking up results from those tournaments and posting those to the site. But always neat when and actually it's the Huntsville. Speaking of Alabama, did you mention Pam Shaheen?
Yes,
she's got her fingerprints on this Huntsville.org intercollegiate. If she doesn't, she encouraged them to sponsor a college golf tournament because. It's down there at Owens Crossing in Alabama on the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. So that's all Pam Shaheen. I tell you what, there's got to be about a dozen college tournaments that are played from the fall through the spring down on the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. That's how good that was. And they are finished down there. Rachel Coughlin, an opening round 76. She is tied for 23rd. And Tennessee Tech currently in fourth place. And Reagan Stuckey tied for 45th. With a 78, her score didn't count, but they got a 71 and a 75 and two 76s. So they are well on their way down there. It's a 3-day event at Owens Crossroads, Alabama. Have you played the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail?
Funny you should mention that, Rob. I have not, but when I was talking to Pam at the show, she invited me on a fan trip in September, so I'm considering that. I would love to. I've never played any of the Robert Trent Jones Trail courses, but I hear they're all great.
I have not either, so if you can finagle me in there, I shouldn't be talking. We're both being – September is always busy with high school golf, so I better watch what I say. I've been learning my lesson lately about biting off more than I can chew, and so I better – I'll let you go on that one, and I'll hang back here, but I can't find that Puerto Rico event that Loyola was in, but Brandy had a number of nice pictures, of course, when you're down in Puerto Rico, what's not like. And so we'll locate those. And then right here in Goodyear, three more Wisconsin golfers playing in the Southwest Minnesota State Invitational. And that's what's neat about, golf courses down here. They open them up to schools that want to host and, Southwest Minnesota State is hosting a 12-team event over at the Wigwam Golf Course, site of the Patriot All-American. And Colorado Mesa with Pulaski's Sadie Kelly and Stoughton's Miranda Kotlowski, currently in third place behind Western New Mexico and Missouri Western State. Sadie Kelly tied for 13th currently after an opening round 77. Miranda Kotlowski struggled to an 87 today. And then Bemidji State has a golfer, Ellie Anderson, out of Altoona, and she currently is in 59th place after a 91. It was a bit breezy down here, Gary, but otherwise Chamber of Commerce Day for golf. But we're, you know, it's a short time here between now and the last week of April is really when all the conference tournaments for college golf take place. And then we'll have the selection shows week one for the women, week two for the men. The end of the road this year is La Costa, the Omni La Costa Resort in Carlsbad, California. They moved from Arizona to California. To me, it's if you come for where we come, Gary, I'll take them both.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a chance to play La Costa years ago, and that was a fun experience over there in Carlsbad. I think I was covering a U.S. Open somewhere. Maybe it was at Torrey Pines. But anyway, La Costa is a great place, and that'll be a great place for college golf.
Another sign of spring is the tournament registrations opening. Of course, Wisconsin opened their amateur golf registration already last month. And I know a lot of people have signed up for events, especially the State Am at Merrill Hills. Today, those that hopped the border, Gary, were able to sign up for events for the first day of 2024 in Minnesota. And I had to ask JT Johnson if he was up. I heard he had registered already for the mixed team tournament that I always see him at each summer and over in Minnesota. And you want to know the breakdown between Minnesota and Wisconsin for JT Johnson this year?
Is it half and half?
It's okay. There's 22 events currently that he's registered for. What do you think the breakdown is?
I would say a dozen Minnesota, 10 Wisconsin.
3 Minnesota, 19 in Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
He is drinking the Wisconsin Kool-Aid, the former Monona, the Monona. He'll always be a Monona native, but I think they list him as being from Sparta on this side of the border, and I don't know why. But I don't even know where he is from. All I know is he's always at tournaments we're at, and of course he's the defending state senior match play champion, so that might have something to do with it. And I know that he really enjoys. I think he's qualified for the Nelthorpe Cup by his play last year. And, you know, he loves the Wisconsin-Minnesota Senior Cup matches, too. And he likes being on the Wisconsin side of that. And so 19-3, Wisconsin over Minnesota.
Well, once a Badger, always a Badger, I guess, Rob, right? JT, we love watching him play golf. And you'd love even more talking to him after a round of golf. He's always a hoot.
He sure is. So, we had a neat story today on our site from Rick Platel, lifting up the fact that waiting lists have been developed for the USGA local qualifiers. And, I know that they all seem to be robust, the U.S. Open local especially. But apparently from reading that story, Gary, I'm not sure if you had a chance to look at it, but, once the entries closed in the past, the waiting list basically went away. And so now, you know, last year I saw more WDs from USGA qualifiers than any other, you know, results we posted. And I couldn't figure out what, you know, I've never been in one, never, you know, registered for one, obviously, and never, have withdrawn from one. So I'm not sure what that process is like, but the volume tells me that there's not a very stiff financial penalty. They must get their money back if they withdraw before the event, but apparently they never got to replace those players in the field. And occasionally, you know, there probably were some tournaments where, people wanted to try to qualify. I would think so.
Oh, okay. So I just kind of skimmed the story, Rob. And, you know, so now there's a waiting list for those tournaments, it sounds like, right?
Yeah, a waiting list, but also, you know, the waiting list, it'll have a maximum of 10 players per site. And and they can only be on one qualifier waiting list. As you know, there's you know, multiple local qualifiers, especially in this new era of local to sectional for some of the U.S. amateur championships. But I didn't realize that, you know, basically if you didn't get in and you were on a, you know, I guess a mythical waiting list, that the mythical waiting list even went away and they didn't do much to add to the field. But now that's not the case. Now, if you sign up and you don't get in to the, you know, to the field, the first 10 after the field is full will be placed on a list and, you know, given updates about whether that field is remaining at the volume that it was when entries closed. So, you know, again, I think that's mainly for USAM, US Open, probably could be US Junior. I don't think it's a problem with the girls junior qualifying, but maybe perhaps the junior boys. And, we don't have a lot of others beyond that. And especially, you know, the two that really, you know, have a lot of room to grow are the women's mid amateur and the, women's senior open, you know, are, you know, tournaments that don't get a lot of people trying to qualify, and the rewards are great. You get to play in a USGA national championship.
Yeah, I think the development of waiting lists is a great, great thing for some of these amateur championships, Rob, because as you mentioned, some of those qualifiers, there's quite a few withdrawals. And if you missed, you know, the sign up by minutes, literally, because it's all done online now, and you were aced out, and then you watched a bunch of people withdraw, you're probably thinking, why wasn't there a waiting list? I could have gotten in this tournament. So I think that's a great change.
Also, since we last talked, Gary, you had a couple of really cool stories. Barneveld's Vortec Optics, a leader in rifle scopes and binoculars, is entering the golf rangefinder business. What's going to make them unique, Gary? How are they going to take on what seems to be maybe not so much a robust market, but one dominated by a couple of key vendors, including Bushnell?
Yeah, Bushnell would be the big name, certainly. LaserLink Golf, our good friend Rob O'Loughlin and Madison, who started that company. I think, you know, Vortex Optics is known for their optics. They have, you know, they're an industry leader in rifle scopes, binoculars, spotting scopes, that sort of thing. So I don't think it's a leap to go to the Golf Laser Rangefinders. The optics are going to be great. But what's going to set them apart, Rob, is their unconditional, unlimited lifetime warranty. If you buy a laser rangefinder from them and 3 years into it, you drop it on a cart path or it falls in a water hazard or you run over it with your cart, they're going to fix it or replace it for free. It's an unbelievable warranty, and nobody else in the business offers that kind of warranty. So I think that kind of customer care and concern for the customer is, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be organic growth for them. But I think as more and more people buy them, find out how good they are and what a great warranty is, I think they're going to make a niche in this business, I think.
Before we get to the last topic I wanted to get to, I should also mention, too, that we had a couple of Monday qualifiers going on around the country today. It turned out that Mario Tiziani did not need to attempt to qualify for the Kolegaard Classic. He got in earlier today when Brant Jobe withdrew. Yesterday, Tim O'Neill, who was first on the alternate list, got in when Rob Labritz withdrew. So Mario didn't have to tee it up down at Oro Valley. He's in with Jerry Kelly, the tournament host, and Steve Stricker. Tony Rolick, the reigning Wisconsin State Senior Open champion, shoots a 77 out at Oro Valley today, and he missed by about 9 shots. Jim Carter, Greg Chalmers, and Scott Parrell got in. Scott Parrell is currently 17th on the Charles Schwab Cup standings and didn't get a sponsor's invite. We kind of wrote about that. You know, yeah. There's 81 guys that get in the fields each week for the PGA Tour champions, and, you know, and there's always someone turning 50. And Scott Parrell, Tim O'Neill, Mario Tiziani kind of, you know, had to yield those to other golfers. A couple from, you know, Ted Purdy, who used to be Herb Kohler's partner at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am every year. He just turned 50. He's from Tucson. And then Jonathan Kay, I believe, is from Phoenix. So much like we do here in Wisconsin, we, you know, take the Kolegaard Classic does take care of their own in terms of their own being Arizona. But we do have 3 in, and that's good. We almost, I thought at the turn at the Puerto Rico Open qualifier today, Gary, we might have a chance with Harrison Ott. He was 2 under at the turn with a bogey, but He shot one over 37, I think it was, on the back nine, and wound up shooting one under 71. And he misses by four shots, only four shots, though, of getting into the alternate field event this week for the on the PGA Tour. George Kneiser also in the field. He shot a two over par 74. But it's kind of a neat, this open qualifying season. We've got more people from the state of Wisconsin trying to qualify. And I saw Emily Lauterbach, who's on the Epson Tour. She'll use that Epson status to try to qualify for an LPGA Tour event in California and one here in Arizona here coming up in the next month. And so we'll be able to look to those scores as well. A lot of people trying to, you know, earn their way on to the big tours.
Yeah, yeah. You know, a few years back, we didn't have too many people trying these Monday qualifiers, but we've had so many good players coming out of college the last 4 or 5 years, Rob, that you were seeing these guys pop up, guys and women pop up in these in Monday qualifiers and trying to get into these events. And, you know, Thomas Longbella got in a Korn Ferry Tour event this past week, correct?
Yep, yep. Chuts. I think it was 69-70 and missed a cut by just a few.
Yeah.
It was one of those weeks where the people on the Korn Ferry Tour were going really low.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good opportunity for Thomas, and I'm sure we will continue to see more of him, you know, especially as he gets to be able to use status for reaching the final stage of PGA Tour qualifying school last year. I guess, you know, a long time ago, Gary, when I was apparently I did take classes at the University of Wisconsin, and many of them were journalism classes. They taught us something about the inverted pyramid, and that we're going inverted pyramid today because really the biggest story in the last week was the one that you wrote shortly after we signed off on talking.golf last week. The 2025 Wisconsin State Amateur is going to the Lido at Sand Valley. And I tell you what, we had such a blast at Sand Valley 2 years ago when the State Am was there. I can't wait to go back, and I'm sure golfers can't wait to go back. You played the Lido. There's a lot of buzz about it. I can't wait to see how it holds up as a State Am venue.
Well, first of all, I think this this 2025 State Amateur is probably going to set a record for number of entrants. They might have to add a qualifier or two, Rob. Everyone wants to play the Lido. It's a private club. There is some tee time availability for the public, but you have to stay at the resort in order to snag those tee times. So for the vast majority of golfers in our state, competitive golfers have not seen that place. And it is a wonderful golf course, a absolute perfect replication of a long-ago course on Long Island called the Lido that was plowed under during World War II. The Navy declared it a strategic defense site and plowed the course under. And the Kaiser family brought it back to life with the help of a Chicago golf history buff named Peter Flory, who did amazing research with old photos and maps and everything, was able to recreate the course on a video game. And then Tom Doak, our golf architect, took those plans and brought it back to life. And it is going to be a highly anticipated State Amateur next year, Rob.
July 21st through the 24th, 2025, we go back to Sand Valley. Now, it is a lot like the two courses that we saw 2 years ago. There aren't many trees there, are there?
No, it's similar in that respect, Rob. No trees at all. It's a wide open, gigantic property that they stripped all the pine trees off and exposed all that sand barren. And it's a kind of course where, as Rob Jansen, the executive director of the WSBA, said in my story, you really have to play it a few times to figure out where you're going, to figure out the lines, to learn the green complexes. It's not a straightforward golf course. It takes some course knowledge. So it would behoove anyone who qualifies for that State Am next year to get up there and play a practice round or two.
Well, that'll be fun. And it might also give us the opportunity, Gary. 2 years ago, I introduced you to the Ridges. This might be the time we go to Bullseye.
Yeah, never played Bullseye. The closest I got was eating dinner there with my buddies because I had to cover the, I think it was the state. No, it was the U.S. Senior Open qualifier at Stevens Point Country Club. My buddies were all over at Bullseye, and I joined them at night for dinner. But I saw a couple of greens, and that's all I've seen of Bullseye, your old stomping grounds, Rob.
Absolutely. Did you you mentioned that this 2025 State Am might set records for qualifying? Do you want to be the one, or should I broach to Jeff Perkle maybe a local, the sectional state amateur qualifier?
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, quite possible. I was thinking, Rob, maybe they have a media qualifier.
Oh, no.
That might be ugly, though. Never mind that.
After watching the State Open at Ozaukee and watching those guys try to putt those greens, and it'll be the same at Merrill Hills this year. Trust me. You know, boy, I complain when I get 2 inches of run out, you know, and if I strike a putt on those greens, it's going to sail by. And, we'll see how the Lido, you know, the greens compare. There's a lot of other stuff they have to worry about. I think if the amateur golfers this year can kind of dial in the driver at Merrill Hills, then it does become a putting contest. But on greens that are really, really tough and old and old in a good way, you know, old complexes that have great, you know, upkeep and care. I mean, this is what's so great. Everyone asks us about golf in Wisconsin. You wrote about, the number of top 10 courses in the Golf Digest list. I mean, you know, there's a reason. I mean, there's 10 on that list, Gary, but as we talked about last week, there's dozens others that have the same kind of conditions that allow us to rotate these. I called up to Oneida Golf and Riding today to find out when the Badgerland Invitational is for our schedule, and thought back to when Jerry Kelly won the State Open there. I mean, we haven't gone back, I don't think, to Oneida for a State Open, but you could. I mean, any of these great private courses in the metropolitan areas are conditioned so well that it allows us to, you know, really give our competitive golfers the great variety. And you and I have played with our colleague Mike Davis at Blue Mountain on multiple occasions, and I mean, that's just a different experience with greens that good and conditions tee to green that good.
Well, the thing is, the WSGA has great cooperation and help and support from the best golf courses in the state, really. And I don't think you could go to any other state and find an array of state amateur venues, for instance, like the ones we have in Wisconsin here, Rob, with Milwaukee Country Club and Blue Mound and, Minocqua with a State Open this year. I mean, the WPGA and the WSGA are taking their best championships to the very best golf courses in the state, and you don't find that in other states.
No, you sure don't. And, Eau Claire Golf and Country Club, Bullseye's hosted a state amateur. Stevens Point Country Club's hosted everything. And host the USAM qualifier this year. So it's just, I hate using that term embarrassment of riches, but it's a luxury that we have as golfers and golf writers in the state to be able to go places and watch great competition because the courses are so good. The cooperation is exponential, as you just mentioned. And, I'm looking forward to this. That was one of the, it was a story that we knew was coming, Gary. And I was excited that, we were able to finally, get it up on the site. And, it has really, really moved the needle. And, it's because there's going to be major, major interest in another state amateur up at Sand Valley. It's going to be fun. But right now I think we need to get, have you looked out the window? Are the storms, off on the lake yet? What's the weather update as we close out talking.golf?
Yeah, it appears the worst is over, Rob. I don't hear rain pelting the house right now, so that's a good sign, and I don't see lightning. So I think it's out over Lake Michigan right now. It was a quick one, but it was a violent one.
If you had a thunderstorm during talking.golf on your March the 4th bingo card, congratulations, you're the big winner. Gary has cooled off to 44, going down to 37 tonight. So not cold enough for that to change the rain. But, Gary, you're going to sleep all the night. It's going to rain throughout the night. That's nothing like a good all-night rain to kind of keep you, just kind of be that background music as you dream about rounds of golf to come.
Yeah, not quite warm enough to open the windows and listen to the rain, but that's all right. I'll hear it anyway.
Awesome. Well, Gary, we covered a lot of ground today. Appreciate the time, and we'll talk golf again next week.
All right, Rob. Thank you.
For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf.